From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 17th day of May 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. I made a trip around the South Farms earlier this morning and found just one planter running there and checked in with Stephen Moose to see what kind of activity he was up to. It's a pretty interesting experiment. We'll have just a quick blurb from him, and then as we finish up our time together, of course, we'll talk about the weather forecast. To Eric Snodgrass will be here from Agrible on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check in now with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Nice to be with you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
You know, when we did Commodity Week yesterday, and if folks can stay with us for the whole hour, they'll have part of that. I think that the analyst had an inkling that soybeans were weak. I don't think that they recognized that they would drop nearly this far today. What happened?
Well, they did decouple, and they were running, you know, and we were seeing the beans run and co-move with the wheat and the corn early in the week. And then we saw, as we got towards yesterday's close and the overnight trade, and then especially today, that decoupling and the derailment in that co-movement. I think it was really several factors that finally came together. In part because the weather models also changed a little bit to not propel the wheat and the corn straight up. And that's one of the things that the beans didn't want to fight earlier in the week. We didn't have that today, but we have the spread extreme at this point, Todd. We've got a bean-corn ratio in the new crop that is making new contract low after new contract low each and every day this week. And that's now down to like 2.13. Beans premium to the corn. We also had the Brazilian currency come in at a 7-month low this week against the U.S. dollar. That seemed to dovetail pretty nicely with the U.S.-China trade negotiations truly stalling out and pretty much an impasse confirmed by the news overnight that we were going to get more aggressive against Huawei and kind of directly go after China more. And so as a result, we found out then this morning that China said, well, no sense in talking because you're not serious. Then that was followed up with news that Brazil had booked about 5.5 million tons of Chinese beans, of beans to ship to China. And then I think lastly, and this is probably the most important one for me in the longer term and gives me the most nervousness when it comes to the soybeans, is the president's plan for direct support for soybean and hog producers. At first blush, that looked pretty positive price-wise, but it's also an incentive now to not take prevent plant on corn if you have that decision to make and just go ahead and jump over into the beans, because I've taken phone call after phone call this week from producers asking that question. Should I just take prevent plant on corn, or should I push the corn as hard as I can? I don't know if I want to do beans because I just don't know if the market's going to be there when I harvest this fall. Well, now you kind of have a Trump put in place, and this type of direct payment plan also, and Sonny Perdue was just talking about it on Fox News, it also puts in the mindset of the trade that we are indeed hunkering down and we are indeed at a trade impasse with China when it comes to, right down to it. And so I think that's why the hogs and the beans in particular at the end of this week looked a lot weaker than what we saw earlier this week.
Now, just for clarification purposes, there's not been any information released about what the plan looks like at this point, just that the CCC will be used, which is what they used for the MFP payments last year.
Yeah, I've seen anywhere from 6 to 15 to $20 billion. I've seen where it could focus directly on soybean and hog producers. There's just so much rhetoric out there and talk out there. I think all we know for sure is the president has tapped the USDA to give him a plan to propose so that they can follow through with it. And the idea at this point, the latest I saw, the big question I had up until this morning, still a question, but not as big, was, okay, do you have to go to Congress for this? Because do you have to get new monies and therefore appropriate through Congress. And as you say, they were working away from that through some of these other avenues.
Yeah. So, and Sonny Perdue on that Fox News interview, and I did watch it just before we went on the air here, talked about using the Commodity Credit Corporation. I have checked a couple of other places, and they should be able to tap that for this kind of relief without having to go to Congress. At least that's the expectation. And he also thinks it'll be WTO, or whatever they're coming up with will be WTO compliant. So I don't know what that means exactly. It's tough to say, but they're saying next week we'll probably know what happens there. I thought it was interesting because you apparently have watched this whole thing as well. At the very end of the interview, he was asked about the beef deal with Japan. And so they are leveling out the trade agreements, relatively speaking, with Japan. And they've agreed, I guess, to put the United States in the same trade, at least for beef being imported into Japan, into the same trade pot as the 10 countries that are in the TPP. And Sonny Perdue actually mentioned the TPP in that process, which surprised me. I don't know about you.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really valid point and valuable point for the listener, especially when you take away this week. And it's nice when you and I get to talk on Friday because it's all hindsight. But as we go to next week and the uncertainty, everybody's going to look at the planning progress number on Monday. But let's not forget what happened this week. Wheat led the low. That makes it a very strong market because the wheat is leading the low. I would have liked to have seen a 465 close above in soft red wheat. I didn't quite get there today, but still the wheat led the low before the crop progress numbers came out. So that tells me that the trade and the currency issues are not as negative as they have been. And that's in part why the funds started to cover short so aggressively in the wheat. And indeed, we got trade news that the Japanese, the Mexicans, the Europeans, and the Canadians are now back in kind of a slot to work with. And this is one of my biggest criticisms of the administration, starting too many trade fires, not being able to manage them all. If you're going to take on China, don't take on five others or four others of your best trading partners. And I think we have readjusted and recalibrated, and that's very positive. And I think that really reflected well in the currencies. While the Chinese currency weakened substantially this week, we really didn't see a lot of negativity develop in other emerging market currencies. And in fact, the Japanese yen continues to gain on the U.S. dollar, which is a good sign for commodities. Typically, that's kind of an inflationary precursor many times. And when you go back and look at commodity prices and the Japanese yen against the dollar. So I think these two things are very valuable pieces of information to take forward into next week. And once we get past the crop progress report and corn planting report, see if those don't come in and support us.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it a lot. You have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzulo of GlobalCommodityAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Just a quick reminder that Monday, USDA will release the next weekly crop progress report. This past Monday, that number showed just 11% of the corn crop in the state of Illinois had been planted. And in fact, the first corn to be planted on the South Farms here in Urbana-Champaign, the experimental plots, went in this morning. I caught up with Stephen Moose as the planter began to roll early on today and asked him about the trials that he was conducting.
Yeah, well, we're trying to see what varieties will do better with nitrogen. We have some that we actually messed with some genes that should change how they respond to nitrogen. Some worse, hopefully some better.
Stephen Moose is a crop scientist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. I'll keep you up to date on those nitrogen studies and what that gene manipulation might or might not show as it relates to the plant's ability to use nitrogen. Now let's stay with late corn planting. Earlier today, I sent a note to Lance Honig. He's the chief of the crops branch at USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Washington, D.C., asking how USDA might incorporate prevented planting data into the June acreage report. He says this question comes up regularly and wrote back for the June acreage report. NAS will survey farmers and asked them to report the total acres planted or still to be planted for each of the crops. And then he went on to say, we will use that information to establish our acreage estimates. Technically, we don't incorporate prevented planting data because our estimates will represent what was actually planted or is still intended to be planted. Certainly, he says, we will look at the prevented planted acreage information, but Lance Honig says to directly incorporate it would be making several assumptions that are likely not true. Let's check the weather forecast now with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us. You know, yesterday afternoon, there were some storms that made their way through eastern Illinois. I think that surprised a few people.
Well, Todd, those storms yesterday, I think, caught a few people by surprise. It was interesting to watch from a meteorological perspective. There was a pretty sizable ridge in the middle part of the country, and on the northern edge of it 2 days ago, storms initiated in North Dakota, and it was neat. The outflow of those storms kind of pushed their way through parts of Minnesota, through Wisconsin, and set up on a boundary right in northern Illinois yesterday. And then, with the heating of the day, those storms got going, and then they just pushed right through east central Illinois, chasing a bunch of people out of the fields who are trying to get stuff planted, because we did, leading up to this, actually have a couple of days in there where we dried out and warmed up, and yet the storms just chased everybody right out. Now, they not only chased them out with just rain, but also some rotation, and also we saw one tornado report and also some big hail and some very, very strong winds. In total, there's almost 150 reports of severe weather, most of them centered right here in the northern part and eastern part of Illinois, getting over to Indiana, and even back over to Iowa as well. Now, when we move forward in this forecast, we're going to have to be extremely careful. I've seen shared across social media, and I've seen talked about, you know, all of these 10-day precipitation maps that are coming out from the GFS model and other models, and people are starting to see some ridiculous rainfall amounts. And I just want to put in a word of caution. We cannot use these models, even though, yes, they are the best models we have on the planet. We cannot use them when we have thunderstorms, convectively driven weather events, where we're going to be getting our rainfall from localized thunderstorm events. We can't use these maps to pinpoint precip. You know, I saw yesterday's morning model run from the GFS say that parts of Illinois were going to get an additional 10 to 12 inches of rain. And I'm sitting here looking at this going, now, wait a second, got to understand, this model can't possibly forecast that over the next 10 days. So what do we have to do? Well, we know that the atmosphere is juiced up. The Gulf of Mexico is wide open. The Pacific jet stream is screaming, and therefore it's going to dip into a trough, rise into the middle part of the country, and just unlock the potential for the Gulf of Mexico to spread moisture. Will there be places across the central United States, the western Corn Belt, and part of the eastern Corn Belt that get a lot of rain? Absolutely yes, over the next 10 days. Is it going to be a foot of rain? No, not widespread like the model suggests. There will be some locally heavy rainfall amounts where places are picking up 3, 4, maybe even 5 inches of rainfall, and that is going to be continue to be our problem as we progress through this planting and what I guess we should call replanting season, because the heaviest rains stretch from parts of the Dakotas through Nebraska, through Iowa, Minnesota, western Illinois. Now, the eastern Corn Belt looks as though it might get a little bit of a break, because the dominant southeast ridge is going to try to keep things, well, shielded down there. But just over the last 24 hours, those storms that pressed through Indiana and Ohio, I saw a report this morning from a guy in Ohio that had, showed a picture of his rain gauge, and just in the last 24 hours, he was stuck right underneath some of these thunderstorm cells that gave him 4.2 inches, and he showed a picture of his fields that looked like a lakefront property set up there. So that region just got hammered with rain. So what's coming to us over the next 10 days is coming in multiple waves. You know, we here in central Illinois might get through much of the day today on Friday without too much in the way of precipitation. But what we're going to be watching will be to our west on Saturday getting into Sunday, where we're going to get this our best chance at seeing some severe weather, especially on Sunday. After that, a brief cool down here in Illinois, but things will go right back into that active southerly flow pattern, and we're just going to see multiple rounds of rainfall next week. Now, honestly, the big question that I'm trying to answer is, yes, we've been saturated, but does the pattern break? Do we get rid of the strong Pacific jet? Does the high latitude, I'm talking about over the North Pole, does that big ridge that's sitting up there helping this whole thing go so fast, does it break down? Does something move? Does the southeast ridge get out of the way? And we keep looking out to the beginning of June, And there's a clue that maybe by the beginning of June, and I'm talking about the end of the first week of June, that things just finally, well, calm down a little bit. We don't go over into a pattern that I would advertise as dry, not even close, but I do see a shift that at least has me excited that things might possibly, well, not be just relentless rainfall. So we do see that at least, you know, occurring once we get out beyond the end of May and beginning of June. But until then, this is going to continue to be a major, major problem for the midsection of the country. Now, globally, if there's something to be on the lookout for here, we are going to be watching parts of Eastern Europe get quite wet over the coming days. Coming out of South America, I'm not hearing much of a story. You know, they're supposed to be drying down this time of year. They were wet up until they've started harvesting this safrinha crop, and the reports, almost everything I see looks really, really good. Speaking about China, over the next 15 days, much of the major grow regions in northern China, though, are going to be wet, which is, you know, these spring rains are important for their agricultural productivity. So we'll keep a close eye on that and keep reporting it throughout of you know, the weeks here. But globally, there isn't much of a weather story right now. Much of the focus is on the central United States.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible.